All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Check one, two. Check one, two. Welcome to the Film Room Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Proctor. And in this show, I'm going to break down the game of college football and give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you need to know each week as the Utes and Cougs buckle up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. Break. Okay, everybody, welcome to week 11 of the college football season. We are just coming off of the first set of college football playoff rankings, something we're going to talk about today. We're also going to talk very briefly, we're going to go back in time a week and kind of do some film review from BYU's win over Iowa State in Ames, Iowa, and then we will jump into our scouting report for the big top 10 matchup this week, ESPN College Game Day, probably a preview of the Big 12 Conference Championship game, BYU versus Texas Tech. So we also will include this week kind of a bonus episode. There are a couple points I wanted to talk about. First of all, I wanted to go a little bit more in depth with discussion about those college football playoff rankings and what they mean for Utah, what they mean for BYU. And also then just another kind of a side tangent, kind of an interesting thought process I had this week about the way that we approach our fandom. So be on the lookout for kind of a bonus episode after this one comes out. We'll post both of them tonight. Again, it's late Wednesday night. It's pretty much Thursday morning. So be on the lookout for these episodes to come out Thursday morning as you guys are driving to work. Let's go ahead and dive in real quick to our film study from Iowa State a week and a half ago. BYU toppled Iowa State last Saturday in Ames, Iowa, 41-27. A game that I think, you know, for BYU fans, that score is a lot more comforting. I think it represents, it was more of a battle at the start of the game for sure. Obviously, you know, BYU got down early. Very first play of the game, they got down on a kind of an unfortunate combination of a defensive play call that was, you know, well predicted and kind of foreseen by Iowa State's offensive coordinator. So I think it depends on which team, you know, which perspective you're looking at this game from. I think if you're Iowa State or a BYU opponent, you're looking and saying, hey, you know, Iowa State really played BYU quite closely until Iowa State started to make some more mistakes, which we'll talk about here in a second. As always, we touch on Bear Bachmeier's performance. He was 22 for 35, which is almost 63% percent completion percentage. Not bad, not horrible, not great, though. He did have 307 yards receiving for two touchdowns and no interceptions, which I think is always the best stat a quarterback can have. He also had 12 carries for 49 yards and one touchdown. So another solid performance from an always improving Bear Bachmeier. I think he gets more and more comfortable under the in the pocket or under center. He gets more comfortable in, you know, throwing situations, passing situations, running situations. I think he's getting better about, you know, making smart decisions with the football. So excited to see what Bear will be able to do this coming week against Texas Tech. The rushing game, sans L.J. Martin, struggled. L.J. only had 15 yards before leaving the game due to an injury, though he did have one touchdown. The rest of the team as a whole, including Bear Bachmeier, only had 103 yards rushing. The team as a whole only had 103 yards rushing, meaning that besides L.J. and Bear Bachmeier, the rest of the rushing offense only put up 39 yards rushing, which is just not going to cut it against teams like Texas Tech, Cincinnati, or TCU, plus whoever you end up facing in the Big 12 championship, assuming you continue to win out and get there. We had two bright spots on the offense, though, Parker Kingston and Chase Roberts. Both killed it. They each logged about 130 yards of receiving on the night. Parker Kingston had two touchdowns. Both receivers had long receptions of 45 yards on the dot. The offensive line played sort of a hot and cold game as they allowed two sacks on Bear, and they run blocked well enough to only gain, you know, 3.5 yards per carry. But they also did allow their quarterback enough time to throw for over 300 yards for the second time this season. So things to look forward to, things to look to improve for sure on the offensive line. The defense played kind of its old typical bend but don't break style. They allowed more yards than they should have, but they also came up with 4 sacks, 3 interceptions, a turnover on a contacted punt, which I think technically is ruled as a fumble. And they also forced 2 turnover on downs for Iowa State. BYU's offense, conversely, had no turnovers, which led to a +4 turnover ratio for the Cougars in Ames last Saturday. Besides those turnovers that I just mentioned, Iowa State, I thought, looked great. Rocco Becht had 311 passing yards. He completed 66% of his passes. Running back Carson Hansen, I thought, was very impressive. He had over 150 yards rushing. The Cyclones had 10 players catch passes throughout the game, one of which was for a long and beautiful 75-yard stop-and-go touchdown on the first play of the game, as I mentioned. Unfortunately for the Cyclones, that first play of the game would also be the last play of the game that they would score through the air. I still think that Iowa State is not as bad a team as they've been written to be, or as maybe their record shows. I think the Big 12 as a whole is better than what they get credit for. It's the same discussion we've had before about the old Pac-12 circle of suck is now the new Big 12 circle of suck. Everyone kind of beats each other. I think we're lucky right now to have, you know, 3 or 4 teams that are at the top that have one, either no losses or 1 or 2 losses. But I still think Iowa State, not a bad football team. I think the takeaway from this game is one that we've seen pretty frequently all year long with the Cougars, that this BYU team is resilient. They may not always get the best start. They may not always play their best football. And who knows, maybe they aren't even the best team in the conference, but they know how to adjust. They know how to stay calm, you know, set their minds on the task at hand, and just plain and simple, don't give up. Which I think is huge in a game this week against Texas Tech, a team who dominates in the fourth quarter. I hope it also helps to point out, you know, to the coaching staff and the players themselves that there's a lot of work to be done, and that the work never stops. You never arrive, right? Anyway, I'm hoping they'll learn from that and bring that onto this next week. So let's go ahead and move on to our scouting report for this next week. In the Utah-Texas Tech episode that I had in week 4, I talked a lot about my anticipation for that game as we kind of began to understand the magnitude of that matchup. I said back then that I believed that, you know, Utah versus Texas Tech was the Big 12's two best teams facing off. And I'm going to repeat that again this week because I really do feel that Texas Tech, Utah, and BYU are the Big 12's three best football teams. Record speaking, technically, Tech and BYU have a little bit of a leg up on Utah right now. So, you know, I can say this again, that this week's matchup is the Big 12's two best teams facing off. But again, I'll confidently say that I think all three of these teams are equally dominant. All three equally have the ability to win the conference championship game, whichever of those three teams should go. All three have the ability to go to the college football playoff, to play well, to win games in the college football playoff, and to represent the Big 12 on the national stage. But that all depends on how the rest of the season shakes out. Starting with this game especially, Texas Tech's offense, generally speaking, we had talked in, again, the Utah episode about the air raid. It's been a minute since we've brought up this term air raid in any of our episodes, either for BYU or for Utah. But the air raid is what Texas Tech runs. They've run it ever since the late coach Mike Leach was there. It's just become, you know, a part of their culture, a part of their identity in the time since Coach Leach was there. The air raid is an offense that predicates itself on getting the ball into the player's hands through the air in as many ways as possible. But it's not just as simple as saying, like, oh, they pass a lot, right? It's a spread offense. Spread offenses pass a lot, right? Just like your standard spread offense. An air raid offense will run your standard, you know, 3 to 5 route schemes, saying, hey, you've got, you know, 3 or 5 receivers. Go ahead and run your routes, and our quarterback will go through his reads. First read, not there. Second read, not there. Third read, throw. We'll throw it to whoever's open, right? That's fine. They'll do that. But the rest of the offense is different. It's planned. It's like a blocked swing pass out to the boundary or a quick spot pass out wide. Middle screens. It's an offense that uses targeted play calls meant for specific players in specific spaces. And it's designed to draw your attention to a specific receiver on a specific part of the field so that you take your attention off of another receiver on another part of the field and so on and so forth. So they throw the ball a lot, but they throw the ball in really creative ways that is designed to sort of replace the run game in a way, right? They run a lot of, obviously shotgun formation or pistol formation, which would be shotgun with the running back lined up rather than being lined up to the side of the quarterback. He's lined up 3 or 4 yards behind him. Whenever they're in pistol, it's usually a running play or a play action play of some kind. If they're, you know, doing shotgun with the running back kind of offset to the side, that gives you maybe a little bit more of an indication that they're going to throw the ball. The only time I really ever see them do under center snaps would be when, you know, you kind of see them do this nonchalant walk up to the line to fake like an audible call on a 3rd and 1, and then I've seen Baron Morton kind of dip under center real quick for a QB sneak. It's pretty sneaky. Talking about the pass game, let's talk about Baron Morton. Baron Morton is their quarterback number 2. He's 6'2", 220. He's a senior, and he's been at Texas Tech for a long time. As a redshirt senior, he's been taking snaps since he was a redshirt freshman. He threw for over 1,000 yards as a redshirt freshman. As a redshirt sophomore, he threw for 1,700 yards. And then as a junior last year, he threw for a whopping 3,300 yards last year, including 27 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. So he's consistently getting better and better and better this each year. In fact, he's on track to do the same numbers he did last year, including having sat out a couple games due to injury. This year, so far, he's thrown 184 passes. He's completed 68% of those, and he's got 1,750 yards. He averages 11 yards a reception. He's thrown for 15 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. He's been sacked 8 times, which is not a ton, but it's a good amount. So it's something that BYU should be looking out for. He does a great job of sitting patiently in the pocket. He's got active feet. He doesn't let the pass rush pressure him into rash decisions. When he's in the pocket, he uses his eyes well, meaning that he will look off a safety to make the safety go a different direction, to move him, to create space for the receiver he wants to throw to. He'll redirect linebackers to set up a screen. He'll actually, you know, going through his reads, he's good with his eyes. His shoulders and hips rotate like they should. They're always cocked, always ready to go. I was ready to deliver the football, and he's rarely late to a read. He's very methodical. I mean, this guy is like your true pocket passer. He rarely runs the football. In fact, he barely runs enough to cancel out yards lost due to his 8 sacks. He's not bad on his feet, though. Like, he's quick enough. He's just a true pocket passer who looks to pass the ball at all costs or will look to escape the pocket and throw the ball away. So it would be crucial for BYU's defensive front to get to him. In the event that Baron Morton is unavailable, I think against Utah, he was unavailable as he was concussed. And I don't know if that's the same thing he was dealing with in these other games. He was out against ASU. I don't know what the injury was against ASU, but he did not play in that ASU game that they lost, the one game they've lost, you know, in conference play. And in that case, you know, we've seen number 15, Will Hammond, step up. He's Texas Tech's backup quarterback, who filled in whenever Baron Morton was injured. He's a tough runner. He's not a bad thrower, though. He's got a good shoulder. He's got good feet and can maneuver around the pocket. He is a solid second-string quarterback. He, by all means, I think, could start at another Power 4 school if he wanted to. He's completed 70 passes this year for 680 yards, 7 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. So, you know, a little bit high, a little bit lower touchdown to interception ratio. It is worth noting that Hammond is actually Tech's third most productive rusher at over 300 yards. You know, he's played in 8 of their games, so he still gets carries even when he's not the starting quarterback. Talking about the running game, you know, the schemes that we'll see a lot of, again, a lot of it comes out of pistol formation. Some of it will still come out of shotgun formation. They run a lot of kind of basic stuff. They don't get too crazy. They're not doing lots of, like, you know, jet options and lots of, like, counters or traps or all these plays where you've got these kind of complicated switching blocking strategies. They like to do a lot of zone read, zone blocking, right? So either a zone read, like where the running back is just going to take the handoff and all the linemen are just going to block whoever's in front of them, and that running back's going to just try to find the best hole and just let the running back do his thing. You'll do a read option. Again, it's a zone block where the linemen just block whoever's in front of them. The quarterback, they leave one guy unblocked on the end, and they see what he does. If the defensive end that goes unblocked kind of, you know, sits flat and goes towards the running back, then the quarterback will pull it and run. And if he sits there in the spot and kind of leaves a window, then they'll hand the ball off to the running back and let him go. They'll do some stretch plays where they kind of reach block. They try to say, hey, let's race towards the sideline and try to, you know, create a wall for our running back to run towards the sideline. They'll do some blocked options, what we call a load option, where they bring in an extra tight end or an H-back to kind of block the option. They'll occasionally do some halfback direct snaps with a motion the quarterback out. And then they do, you know, some RPO as well, where they'll you know, make you decide if you're going to cover the running back or the receiver. So those are a lot of the you know, blocking schemes you'll see run with number 8, Cameron Dickey. He's 5'10", 215 pounds. He's a sophomore who's had 134 carries on the year, which means he gets at least 15 carries a game. He has just about 750 yards and 10 touchdowns on the year. He gets 5.5 yards per carry. He's also logged another 140 yards of receiving and 1 touchdown on 14 catches, though one of those catches went for 70 yards. So, you know, about half of his yardage through the air came on one catch. So he does a little bit less through the air than you'd think he does. Otherwise, though, Cameron Dickey, number 8, he's fast. He accelerates quickly through the hole. He keeps his feet kind of churning. He usually opts to run through you in tight spaces. You know, but if you haven't filled the hole and there's just a tight space, a tight hole, he can slip through that hole equally well. He has the athleticism to make you miss or to run around you when he does have open field. Number 8 is a do-it-all running back, and BYU should dedicate a significant amount of defensive attention to stopping him. I would be very happy to have Cameron Dickey on my offense if I was a Texas Tech fan or a BYU fan. I'd be happy to have him on our team. Another running back you'll see a lot of is number 20, Jacoby Williams. He's 5'10", 185-pound sophomore. He's had 92 carries. So, you know, quite a lot less opportunity, almost 40 carries less than Cameron Dickey. But he's got 525 yards, not bad. So he's on pace for a 1,000-yard season. He's got 5 touchdowns. He also averages 5.5 yards per carry. He does a lot more through the air, by the way. He's got 21 receptions for 300 yards and 2 touchdowns through the air. He averages 14 yards per catch. So you will definitely see this guy on the field. And like I said, you'll have to pay as much attention to him on the ground as you will in the air. He's smaller than Dickey. He's about 30 pounds lighter, than Dickey, but, He's fast. He's shifty. He has good hands. He's very smart, too, by the way. He's patient enough to wait for his blockers to set up. He's small enough that he can hide behind them while they do so. But he's explosive enough to make you pay if you don't fill your run gaps right when they open up. And Texas Tech tries to find quick and easy ways to get the ball into the hands of number 20 via screen passes, swing passes, designed one-read passes, etc. Don't get it twisted, though. He will drop his shoulder on you. If he has to. His size makes him hard to locate, his speed makes it hard to get a hand on him, and then his power makes it even harder to bring him down if you do manage to get a hand on him. So, as for the passing game, this is where Texas Tech likes to make their money, okay? They're extremely well-rounded in this facet of the game. They have five pass catchers who are over 300 yards on the year, including Jacoby Williams, who we just talked about. They also have number seven tight end, Terrence Carter Jr. He's 6'2", 245 pounds. He's got 27 receptions on the year for 380 yards and 5 touchdowns. He boasts an average of 14 yards a catch, and this big man is quick. He's strong. He can get out in space. He's hurdled a guy or two, even with all the weight that he's lugging around. You see him run a lot of comeback routes kind of from his tight end position, more along the seam, kind of in the middle of the field. He will run some middle screens from a slightly widened position. He'll run some deeper crossing routes. I think that in this game, whether it's Isaiah Glasker or Jack Kelly that are matched up with Terrence Carter Jr., I think that matchup is going to be one of the most important and also one of the most entertaining matchups of this game on Saturday morning. The other guys to pay attention to for the receiving portion of the game is number five, Caleb Douglas. He is the number one guy to pay attention to, I think, as far as receiving. He's 6'4", 210 pounds. He's a senior, so he's got experience. He's got 41 receptions on the year and about 600 yards. He's their leading receiver. He's got four touchdowns, and he averages 14.5 yards per catch. This dude is long, and he's faster than he looks for someone who's 6'4", 210. If you give him any space, he will use his size to his advantage. He can either use his height to go up and get the ball up high, or he can use his length to kind of get it out wide. And it's just hard to go get that ball away from him when he's so long and he's fast. He's fast enough to create separation in his routes. He can make you miss too, though. If you are able to close that space down, he can make you miss. So BYU will have to break down and tackle through him, not try to arm tackle him. With those long arms, if you try to arm tackle this guy, there are going to be a lot of missed tackles. You see number five, Caleb Douglas. You see him run a lot of those same comeback routes on the outside. He also runs a lot of crossing routes. He's tall enough that they'll throw him a lot of fades along the sideline too. Number three, Coy Aiken, 6'2", 210-pound junior. He's got 35 receptions, 460 yards, and 4 touchdowns. He averages 13.1 yards per catch. Coy is slightly smaller than Caleb Douglas, but he's slightly faster as well. He's a little more shifty. He can run past people in space. Defending Coy Aiken will require BYU's defensive backs to be fast, agile, to be in good shape if they want to defend this kid all day long. Another guy, number one, Reggie Virgil, 6'3", 190-pound senior. He's got 37 receptions, 435 yards, and 5 touchdowns. He averages almost 12 yards per catch. All these guys, multiple touchdowns, in the teens for how many yards they average per catch. I don't have a whole lot on this Reggie Virgil kid. He's obviously still tall at 6'3". He's a little more lightweight than the other two receivers at 190 pounds. Someone to pay attention to. As far as the offensive line is concerned, this Texas Tech O-line is—they're big, they're strong, they're talented, and they're smart. They pass off rushers really well. They rarely let anyone get to Morton. If they've got someone doing some switches or some twists or some delayed rushes or simulated pressures, whatever it is, they can pass protect and form a really good pocket. But they also move really well downfield when it comes to run blocking and setting up screens. I think statistically speaking, it's helpful to know that, you know, overall Texas Tech is fifth in college football for yards gained per game at 492, almost 500 yards of offense every game. They are 14th in passing at about 300 yards per game. They're 24th in rushing at 200 yards per game, and they're third in points scored. They score almost 44 points every game. So this is an extremely impressive offense that BYU has to match up against. And honestly, BYU's defense has been less effective as of late. You know, obviously, I think they're the first part of their season, you know, they started with a pretty easy schedule. Their first six games were pretty doable, so they were probably a little bit, they looked a little stronger than they actually were through those first six games. So, you know, this is a tough matchup for a defense that, you know, where they perform the best is in points allowed per game, which is, you know, they allow 17 points per game, which is good for 16th in college football. But other than that, they are in the high 20s to low 40s in regards to their run defense, their pass defense, and yards allowed. So this is definitely an uphill battle for BYU's defense. We'll see if they're up to the test for their, you know, well, really only their second real big test of the year. Moving on to the defensive side of the scouting report. We talked earlier in the Utah episode about this guy, defensive coordinator Sheil Wood. He's in his first year as a coordinator for the Red Raiders. Coach Wood is coming off of a season where he transformed Houston into one of the best defenses in the Big 12 in 2024, including a notable win at home against a struggling Utah team. After Texas Tech beat Utah earlier this year, Coach Wood's defense has now beaten Kyle Whittingham's Utes for the second year in a row. Coach Wood was also the defensive coordinator at Army in 2021 when they went 9-4. He was defensive coordinator at Troy in 2022 where they went 12-2. At Tulane in 2023 where they went 11-3. I mean, this guy is just like the defensive consultant that you hire to bring in and fix your defense. It's super impressive resume. It's no wonder that the Red Raiders find themselves near the top of the table in the Big 12. Probably the most impressive thing about this defense is that they are number one in the country. Let me say that again. They are number one in the entire country, in all of college football, in rush defense. They allow less than 75 yards on the ground to opposing offenses. The run game will obviously be central to BYU's game plan, as it has been all year. And I have to say it's massive that BYU's tailback LJ Martin is slated to return from an injury this weekend after having a bye week to rehab what looked like was an elbow injury, I think. Now, to what extent he's back will be a major factor. Is he functioning at 100%, 90%, 80%, worse than that? BYU's top 15 rushing offense usually gains about 215 yards a game, but that number drops significantly when number four is not on the field. Defensively, Tech is 37th in passing defense, allowing about 200 yards per game, fifth in points allowed at 13.2, and is a top 10 defense overall. BYU's offense kind of fails to measure up to any of those other metrics, so it's safe to say that despite their higher ranking in both the AP poll and now the College Football Playoff rankings, which trump any other ranking system at this point, it's safe to say that the Cougars' offense has also got an uphill battle in Lubbock this weekend. They're going to have to outperform a defense that is statistically better than they are. BYU cannot afford to start like they did against Colorado or Iowa State. The first two series of this game, I believe, will set the tone for how the rest of the game is going to go and will likely determine the outcome. This game could be very telling for BYU's offense. Can they piece together a complete game offensively in all four offensive phases, meaning offensive line play, rushing, receiving, and quarterback play? Will they prove that they have what it takes to be as great as Jay Hill's defense? That they have what it takes to get it done and win in a Power Four, conference, to get to a Power Four conference championship, to win in the College Football Playoff games that come as a result of that conference championship, or will they be stymied against one of the greatest current defensive minds in college football? So schematically, Coach Wood's defenses, they'll run a lot of different things. They'll run 3-4. They'll run a 4-3, they'll run a 4-2-5, and they'll run a dime, depending on the situation. So a lot of different looks for BYU to look at. They do a decent amount of linebacker blitzing, either from the defensive backfield or kind of lined up on the edge as a walked-up backer, stand-up end, kind of what we call a simulated blitz. They will do some corner blitzing and some safety blitzing as well. We'll talk a little bit more in a minute here about some of the accolades that some of these defensive backs and linebackers have accumulated as a result of this play calling. But they do a good job of mixing up their looks. Sometimes they show, sometimes they don't. And when I say show, meaning sometimes they show blitz, like, hey, we're coming, we're going to blitz you. And sometimes they actually do blitz. Sometimes they show blitz and they don't actually come. They kind of back off, make you think that they're coming, and then makes the quarterback kind of panic, make a bad decision. You know, they typically will, their main offense, or excuse me, their main defense is going to be that nickel 4-2-5 look. They'll opt between cover one and cover two. If there's any weakness I've seen in this defense in film, it's that when they're in cover two, they tend to leave kind of medium depth boundary throws, meaning medium length throws that are 15, 20 yards in depth, towards the sideline. So those medium depth boundary throws, they leave those open as the corner kind of sits underneath, and then the safety struggles to get all the way from the middle of the field all the way over to the boundary. So if I'm Jason Beck, if I'm A-Rod for BYU, that's what I'm looking at. Anything that's, you know, long down or distance, you know, anything third and 10 or longer, they'll bring in an extra defensive back and sub out a linebacker and do what we call a dime defense, which is four down defensive linemen, one solo linebacker in the middle of the field, and then six defensive backs that are covering the back half of the field. So they don't change their defense much in the red zone. And then when they get into goal line or short yardage situations, that's when they will move over to their 4-3 front where they've got, you know, an extra linebacker. Or they'll just pull up a safety and kind of play him in a linebacker spot. So as far as notable players, people to be aware of, on the defensive line, just one guy I've kind of paid attention to is defensive tackle number 33, A.J. Holmes Jr. He is 6'3", 300 pounds. He's a big boy. He has 30 tackles and 3.5 sacks. He's got 3 pass deflections and 2 fumble recoveries. So he definitely gets around. He's you know, fast. He's strong. He's, like I said, he's a big boy. He's got plenty of weight to throw around. He creates problems. So if BYU's offensive line can manage to, you know, hold number 33 at bay, that's going to at least go a small portion of the way towards having success on the ground. The linebacking group is Texas Tech's most complete position group. This is a solid group of linebackers. They kind of have a core of 3 linebackers that are their leading tacklers and their starters. And then they have another set of like 2 guys that kind of come in. They're kind of like specialty backers that come in to put some specific kinds of pressures on certain downs and distances. In the core group of 3, you've got the leading tackler on the team, number 10, Jacob Rodriguez, 6'1", 230 pounds. He's got 74 tackles already on the year. He's got 2 interceptions and 7 forced fumbles. He's forced 7 people to fumble on the year. That's just incredible. He's also recovered one of those fumbles for a touchdown. Safe to say this guy knows how to tackle. He's aggressive. He knows how to fill, the running gaps. And he knows where to put his hands or knows where to put his helmet when he's tackling you. So LJ Martin, Bear Bachmeier, you know, all these guys that are running the ball, they've got to cover up. I really don't like the stat that, you know, 7 forced fumbles through, you know, 8 games. That's essentially 1 forced fumble a game. So if BYU can make it out of this game without a fumble forced by number 10, that would be huge. Number 13, Ben Roberts, 6'3", a little taller, 235 pounds. He's got 54 tackles and 1 interception. And then number 6, John Curry, 6'2", 230 pounds sophomore. He's got 45 tackles. He also has a fumble recovery for a touchdown. All three of these guys are decent run fitters, meaning they fit well into the run gaps. They're okay in pass coverage. They're a little slow to get lateral to the boundary on their pass coverages. And then we've got these other two guys that come in to, you know, if they come in, we should expect some pressures of some kind. These guys don't get as many snaps or as many tackles overall as the first three, but they have way more sacks and such. Number 31, David Bailey. I believe he leads the country right now at 11.5 sacks for a total of 107 yards. He's only got 26 tackles total, so almost every other tackle that he makes is a sack. So definitely have to watch out for number 31. If I'm Bear Bachmeier, I need to be aware that when number 31 is on the field, more than likely he will be rushing, trying to come get me. We also have number 9, Romello Height. He has 6 sacks for negative 42 yards. He's only got 21 tackles total, but he's got 2 forced fumbles. So again, a lot of these guys, I mean, looking at interceptions, forced fumbles, sacks, just, I mean, yeah, they do a lot with their linebacker group. So this is where I'm spending a lot of my attention if I am A-Rod, kind of coming up with my offensive game plan, letting my offensive line and my running backs know, hey, this is where we need to focus our attention. A couple defensive backs to pay attention to, again, just because of these stats, I want you to be aware of. Number 5, Cole Wisniewski. He's 6'4", 220 pounds. He's got 47 tackles, 1 sack, and 2 forced fumbles. Again, just showing how much this defense prides itself on taking the ball away. Number 7, Brendan Jordan, 6 foot, 210 pounds. He's got 32 tackles, 1 interception, and 1 forced fumble. Number 14, Bryce Pollock, 6 foot, 195 pounds, 32 tackles, 4 interceptions. He's got 4 interceptions and 3 pass deflections. So he's definitely the guy that Bear Bachmeier should be on the lookout for, you know, in that defensive backfield there. You know, if he sees number 14 up in the air, you need to be able to make sure you're throwing that ball into a safe place or throwing the ball away. Yeah, I mean, gosh, that's what stands out most to me about this defense is almost every single defender has some accolade of some kind. Everybody has an interception or a pass deflection, a forced fumble, a fumble recovery for a touchdown. We discussed this during Holy War Week about turnovers with Coach Bowers. You know, turnovers don't just happen. They're coached. These things happen on purpose. So you've really got to pay attention when you're playing a defense like this. You have to be constantly vigilant about how they're going to come at you and try to attack you and make you fumble that football or try to go up and intercept that football. Just have to be super aware. Tech's defensive backs are very involved in the run game, which bodes well for BYU because it means that either A, the runners are getting to the second level and beyond, or B, the defensive backs tend to suck up a little bit on expected running downs. They, as well as the linebacker group, tend to be moved with misdirection, whether it's a play-action pass or a counter run or a quarterback moving them with his eyes and shoulders. So, you know, several times in film we see these cornerback and safety pairs getting crossed up during some crossing routes, which leaves wide receivers open. So they definitely are susceptible. You see that their pass defense is the weakest part of their defense, but again, it's not weak. It's very good. It's top 10 defense. But it's just if there was something that, you know, Aaron Roderick and the rest of BYU is aware of, they know that they have to get physical up front. They have to win the battle in the trenches. They have to establish running game, and they absolutely have to open up that running game more by being successful through the air. As far as my prediction, preseason I had predicted BYU to lose this game. That was obviously before we knew much about what either BYU or Texas Tech really had to offer. Nowadays, my estimation of each of these teams is a little bit more up to date, so I look at this game a little bit differently. Unfortunately, I'm still seeing that with BYU's history in big games like this, games that are an early start, games with a big audience, both in the stadium and on TV, you know, a game where both Texas Tech's offense and their defense have such strong advantages over BYU. I hate to say it, but I think that BYU's winning streak probably comes to an end this weekend. I'm going to guess something like 34-20. Now, I would love to be wrong. And here's the thing. I do think that BYU is totally capable of putting a great game together and handling this Texas Tech team. Who knows? Maybe they'll get another shot Adam in a couple weeks at Arlington at Jerry's World. I hope that I'm wrong in regards to the first loss. I hope that I'm right in regards to them going to the Big 12 championship. I hope that the Cougs can come together and win in this gigantic game in front of a national TV audience, but we'll have to see what happens on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and go Cougs.